Actor, director, producer, novelist, journalist, comedian, broadcaster, technology maven, Stephen Fry has been an international success in all of these areas and more. He's also written the book for a hugely successful musical and co-authored an authoritative book on the history of classical music. He is the quintessential modern polymath. His latest production, Doors Open, is the movie adaptation of the 2008 best-selling novel by Ian Rankin, a classic heist caper. It debuts on the Ovation Channel this Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Stephen Fry, you once said that you would be slow to attempt country dancing and incest. Is there anything that you did try that you weren't successful at?
I think those last two would be the last gasp. It was actually Arnold Bax, the composer, who said you should try anything in this life once except incest and country dancing. So I wouldn't want to take credit for that epigram. But no, I do have the firm belief, unlike many, that this is your one shot at existence, this time we have now. And so I'm very keen to get the most out of it. And the more experience and the more variation, the more fun, the more variety of scenery there is on the journey, the happier I am. And I've been very fortunate in being able to do lots of different things, and it just gives me enormous pleasure to, I suppose, because I have a rather low boredom threshold, so I need to keep myself excited all the time by difference. I have nothing but envy and admiration for those who can do the same job every day. Well, part of me is envy and admiration, and part of me is actually feeling sorry for them because I can't picture it. I love the fact that every day I get up and I'm doing something new. Even if it's a film, it'll be a new scene in the film. And even if it's a play, it'll be a new audience. So there's just in the acting side, there's always something new. And in the writing and documentary making and other such things. And even this conversation, it's the first time I've ever had a conversation with you. And so who knows what I'm going to say? I might suddenly say the word theodolite. And I did.
Well, and you did.
I've never done that before in any radio interview.
And I've got your measure. Your character in the film, actually, the very not to, to plot spoil it, but your character kind of echoes that sentiment very late on in the film when he said, the professor says that, you know, life is not an experiment. It's we're merely a smudge in time. We need to try everything. Was that line in the original Rankin book, or is that something that you brought to it?
I think I tinkered around with it, actually. I think the idea of it was in there, yes. And it is one of the things that appealed to me about Rankin's novel. And it came about simply that I was traveling and I had forgotten my electronic book. I'd left it behind, which you could describe me as a technology maven, which is a very nice way of putting it. But I certainly do love my digital doodads. So I actually had to buy a real atomic book made of atomic paper. And
my goodness.
And
how so 20th century?
I know, how very 20th century of me. And the number one at the time was an Ian Rankin book. And I knew he was extremely popular and that he'd created a detective called Rebus. And I assumed this would be a Rebus novel, which I hadn't read any, but I'd seen some of the adaptations with the excellent Ken Stott and the younger version with John Hannah. And I picked it up and saw that it was actually a standalone novel, as it were, and that it was this fantastic idea of an art heist. And as I began reading it, I kept picturing it in that very special way you do when you think of something as being potential material for screen. So I hadn't even finished it when I got to the other side of the Atlantic or wherever it was where I was flying, and I called my business partner and I said to her, look, can we see if this book is available, if the rights are available. And it turned out that the rights hadn't been taken, and so we optioned them, and we had a meeting with Ian Rankin. And it was one of those stories that went so smoothly as to be dull. He said, yes, it would be lovely. We found a writer who was wonderful. We collaborated together on a first draft that the network liked here in Britain, and a second draft that we all liked even better, and a third draft, which was more or less the shooting one, and we made it, and everyone we wanted to was in it, and so it sort of went very happily. And it was had the pleasure of being Scot in Scotland,
indeed,
in Edinburgh, which is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. So that was a special treat.
You mentioned the network, but 15 years ago, this would have been probably a cinema release because the nature of television has changed so much in the last decade and a half that now television is basically doing what Hollywood used to do. Is that a source of disappointment to you? Because I imagine, having finished watching it this morning, I kind of thought that if this was the early 80s, we would be watching this in the cinema.
I think you're right. It's both disappointing and not disappointing. In some ways, the rewards, as far as financial rewards are concerned, are as good, if not better, for television, because television companies are more honest. If you buy it, they pay you.
Right.
Film companies, to try and squeeze any money out of any participation you have, as you know, suddenly it turns out that Star Wars didn't make any money after all, if you have points in it. And it's a slight exaggeration, perhaps, but I think you know the kind of thing I'm referring
right,
to.
Right, and there's so many different media that it's transferred to later on. And, we said we'd give you this for the DVD. We didn't talk about downloads, and there's all kinds of shenanigans
all
go on.
All that stuff going on, exactly. And as long as you sort of get your model, as they insist on calling it, right in terms of the sale, your domestic sale in Britain, and you've covered your costs with that, then as an independent producer, then you can make sure that all your sales abroad into other countries allow you to get enough money, which, as all filmmakers will tell you, you only want to make enough money to be able to make another film. That's really the thing of it, whether it be film television or film, if you know what I mean, whether
sure.
it be theatrical exhibition or through all the various other media pipelines that are now there. But I think we can agree that television has upped its ante extraordinarily in the last 10 years. This quality of writing, whether you date it from, I don't know, The Sopranos or West Wing or something.
Or The Wire.
Either Wire. There's just huge sea change in the quality and
the craft quality as well, lest we forget. They're shooting on film now. It's not. Yeah. It doesn't have that video, that
precisely,
lack of depth of focus that we had with old video cameras and things like that.
That's right. The production values are so high.
Much higher.
Yeah. And also we realize, of course, that it allows for something in television which you can't get in a single film, and that is that human beings change very slowly over time. In movies, the character arc, as they like to call it, has to happen in 90 minutes or these days it tends to be 2 hours, but let's say 90 minutes. So in 90 minutes, they're supposed to have a sort of, a click of the fingers transformation where they suddenly realize their whole life has been a waste and turn around. It's like a kind of, in perfect film terms, it's Help Me, Clarence, I Want to Live.
Even in Doors Open, it's a 10-year span. We see them, it's 5 years, then it's 5 years for the heist, and it's 5 years later. I have a question about the freedom that you got from Me and My Girl. Me and My Girl, very early on, I'm sure most people are aware of the fact that you wrote the book, the libretto for that.
Yeah.
It was very successful and effectively made you financially independent. Is that a fair summation of what it did?
It is, yes. Money poured in a way that it was quite ridiculous for a person in his 20s, and I had no idea that was what happened with musicals. It gave me some sense of just how rich Andrew Lloyd Webber must be.
Sure, but that then gave you the freedom to take on all of these other ambitions of yours that you didn't have to. You say you're sometimes a little envious of people who do a daily job. Believe me, there are a lot more people who are very envious of the opportunities that you get. That's not to suggest that you don't have the talent for these things, but clearly you could be this Renaissance man, this polymath. You could really turn your hand to anything. And if it failed, you didn't have to live on pasta.
That's very true. I think one of the saddest things is fear of failure. It's so much easier to not fail by not trying, and I had the confidence that was given me by the success of Me and My Girl to try and feel that if it didn't work, well, hey ho, that nothing didn't matter, and I think that's a very important thing in life, is to have that sense of confidence, and a huge number of people, unfortunately, are denied it or deny it themselves. Also, I've always been fanatically curious and greedy for knowledge and experience. And sometimes people say, oh, how do you know all this about, Greek civilization, all this history, all that? And I say, well, it's a bit like asking why I've got a rather thick waistline. You could say I've got a thick waistline because I'm greedy.
You do carry off a white suit.
I like food. And if someone is filled with knowledge, it's because they're interested. And I often, people sometimes moan about their education as if it's, I went to a school where we weren't taught that, And you think, well, actually, I went to a school which is full of complete duffers. Well, let's say they were just not interested. It's one of the things about being alive once that I was saying earlier is that I sometimes think we're living in a city where there's gold piled high up to our knees, and you're wading through it so much you can barely walk, there's so much gold, and then you come across somebody holding out their hand saying, help me, I haven't got any money. You might say, well, bend down and pick it up. It's there. And it's a bit like that. We say, oh, I don't know anything. I haven't got any education. Well, bend down and pick it up.
How frightfully American of you, Stephen.
It is, in a way, isn't it? Well, you see, that's a part of me that is very, very allured. I do love America.
You could have been an American, right?
Yes, I'm a resident alien, and I went all around every single one of the United States to make a program for the BBC.
That's right.
Which was enormously good fun.
Well, you didn't spend enough time in Philadelphia, though, I have to tell you.
I didn't. The trouble is that I would have loved to spend an hour on each state. It would have been struggling with Delaware, perhaps. And
Well, even when you crossed the Delaware, you were miles away from Washington's Crossing. I hate to tell you.
I know. Yes, you were paying too much attention. Believe me, it was hard. It was hard to persuade the BBC to get 5 programs out of it. I mean, they originally wanted 3.
Wow.
3 for 50 states. You've got to be out of your mind. And then they said 4, and eventually when they saw the material, they said, 5. And so we managed to get 5. But that's 10 states an hour,
wow,
which is really not enough. And because each state is filled with its own characteristics, its own identity. And in particular, the ones that... that don't have a metropolitan city, great city in them. Maine and states like that have a very self-conscious sense of the Maineness, we're
sure.
Mainers and,
yeah.
and so on. And it's really also so beautiful, so stunningly beautiful. Even the Great Plains have a wild and extraordinary quality about them that really gets to you.
Absolutely. To just stand there and not to be able to see where the corn ends sometimes can be quite
right.
To give you a sense of... I'm getting near the end of my time, but I wanted to ask you, I once saw you being interviewed and you talked about the fact that people will come up to you and shout lines from Blackadder at you and you're completely unaware of them because you've never really gone back and looked at those programs in the same detail that an obsessive such as myself might have done. Do you typically ever look back? Are you interested in the things you've done in the past? Do you ever want to see or review things from 10 or 20 or even longer ago?
Not really. And it's funny you should say that because I had dinner last night with Rowan Atkinson, who's played Blackadder in the Blackadder series. He's just coming to the end of his last week at a very successful theatre run in London, the West End, of the Simon Gray play Quatermain's Terms. And
yes.
Finally got the chance to see it. And we were reminiscing about that. And I reminded him of a line. It came up for some reason in the conversation of a line from Blackadder. And he said, oh, my gosh, he said, I'd completely forgotten that. And then we spoke about it. I said, do you ever watch them? And he said, no. And he said, do you? And I said, no. Now
they have dated really well, I have to tell you.
Well, so people tell me, and I have godchildren and nephews and nieces and things who really love them. I'm approached by people who weren't born when the last one went out.
I can imagine,
Who seem to like them. And indeed, people in the military like them very much.
I can imagine.
The last one. So it's great to have been involved with something like that. But no, I don't. I don't watch films I've been in. I haven't seen the last film I was in that I actually saw, I think, was V for Vendetta, but I haven't seen anyone since then, which I liked. It didn't make me stop seeing them. I just suddenly thought, well, actually, I don't like going to see myself in pictures.
Even Wild, which was a masterwork.
That's so kind of you. And I at the time I watched it, and of course, I had to go to premieres and things like that. But if it's on now, which it sometimes is on a satellite or cable channel.
Well, it'll be on this weekend, actually, before doors open.
Oh, of course, yes,
yeah.
It is. It's a double bill, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That's right. Well, I'm really so pleased I did it, and it was an extraordinary experience. And maybe in 10 years of time or so, I'll look at it again. But I still, it's funny, I don't know, part of me would go, no, don't do that. It's only in the last 100 years that human beings have been able to see themselves acting and not in real time. And in the past, we've been able to see ourselves with mirrors, but when we raised a hand, the reflective image raised its hand too. And then since the invention of the moving camera, we've been able to see ourselves doing things that we can't control. And actually, when video cameras first came out in the 70s and 80s, I remember, at weddings and things, people would see themselves, and their first call would be, stop, don't do that. Oh, don't do that.
It's like the idea of hating your voice, hating the sound of your own voice, which most
exactly.
people, even James Earl Jones, I once asked him about it. He said he hates the sound of his own voice. So it's quite remarkable. So let me ask you, because they're going to kick us out. They're going to kick me out in about a minute. Do you think if Wilde were around today, you guys would be, he would be doing the kind of things that you do? He would have this multifarious career, that he would be interested in all these areas that you're interested in, maybe?
I should imagine he would, because he always talked about new modes of expression, and he loved the modern in his own age, which is obviously very different from the modern in our age, and is much more technologically involved. He wasn't as technologically interested in things as, say, Mark Twain was, who was very interested in the nature of publishing and printing machines and so on, but he was interested in new modes of expression. And I think... and indeed, in terms of the play, the way he wrote, and The Importance of Being Earnest, you know, sort of had a particular naturalness about it. Although people think of it as artificial and epigrammatic, the whole key to it is the ease with which people speak lines of great beauty,
right.
Which had never really been heard in quite that way before. Yes, and I think he would be tweeting away. I can't imagine his Facebook page. I can't imagine what trouble he would have got into.